Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 443. Science Faction, your weekly corona update. Today is Sunday, May 31st, and the numbers stand as follows. Worldwide infected, 6.2 million. Worldwide dead, 372,000. U.S. infected, 1.8 million. U.S. dead, 105.6 thousand. Again, we do the usual caveat that these numbers are absolutely higher in real life, but deaths aren't being recorded, and we don't know who all is infected because of asymptomatic infection rates, all of that kind of stuff. So these are just our baseline of who has been tested and who has died and made the records. Now, when I was writing this episode this week, I had a whole bunch of stuff that we are still going to talk about. But as the world has moved through a very interesting phase in the last few days, especially here in the United States, we are seeing rampant protests around the country in many, many major cities, including the one San Diego that I am broadcasting this here from. And it is somewhat of an elephant in the room because it is going to be a huge part of the coronavirus story and something we have to talk about. Let me go ahead and get this out of the way and say I'm not trying to criticize anybody for protesting. I think protesting, for those of you guys outside of the country, is like a definitively American thing. It's something I absolutely support and think everybody should do, or at least should be able to do. And there has been a very egregious crime that has led to these protests, so that is a very, very understandable thing. However, we do still have to talk about the scientific reality of the consequences of something like these protests. So again, take politics out of it. Forget how you feel about the political situation or, you know, a lot of the really horrible things that led to these protests. Just look at the protests themselves as an actual case study. And it is not a possibility. It is a certainty that these large gatherings, these massive gatherings of people, many without masks, many breathing heavily, is absolutely going to be and unarguably already has been a vector for the disease. Keep in mind, there's been a lot of people who have been essentially cooped up for a long time, and these big mass gatherings mean that there's going to be some people who are sick who are exposing massive amounts of other people to it. It very well could be, especially because a lot of these protesters are younger, obviously, as protesters tend to be, and we know younger people are more likely to be asymptomatic. So we're not saying that people are coming out there with purposely with coughs and corona symptoms, but more likely, probably don't even know they're infected, and they could be spreading it to literally hundreds, if not thousands of people at a single rally, at a single march, at a single protest. It's something we have to think about because realistically, these will be clusters. There will be corona clusters that form around the groups of people that went out to do these protests. And that's terrifying because these are big gatherings of people with a lot of dynamic stuff happening. Nobody's social distancing. You're within very close range of a lot of people at all times. People are running. There's tear gas, which, you know, makes you cough and cry and exude even more of the virus. You have close contacts, in some cases, physical altercations between people. These protests, while absolutely valid as protests, will end up being huge vectors. And one of the really hard things to discuss, and it becomes a political live wire because people think you're trying to shut down their ability to protest, we're not, but one of the things that you have to be aware of is there will be deaths from these. So down the line, this will push the virus through the population. Anybody who gets infected becomes a vector. They will in turn infect other people, and somewhere down the line, people will die. It's something we've talked about before. We talked about this with the armed protesters in government's quarters. We talked about this with the pool parties going on. It's the same idea, is eventually there will be a death toll for large gatherings of people if they're done at this time period. And that's really sad to say. It sounds like you're trying to tell people they shouldn't be able to express their rights, and that's not what I'm saying whatsoever. I think they should be able to, and I think they are right to be able to go do it. However, there are consequences, and there will be a death toll for them. That doesn't necessarily mean it's that person's fault or anything else, but it is something we should be aware of. And as these clusters spread out, it's probably not the people in the protests themselves that are going to suffer, because those people are, again, usually young, are more likely to be asymptomatic or at least have mild symptoms, but the people close to them, the people related to them, the people two or three links down the chain from them. There will be deaths. And it's just one more really crazy thing about this virus, that it puts huge consequences to otherwise normal activities. It really does change the way we live as a society. All right, on to the rest of the program as written before all of this happened, and somewhat related to the topic we just discussed, which is we are starting to see places open up after initial quarantines. We are now seeing different phases going in. This is different depending where you are all around the world. And some people are scared that we're going to have a repeat of what happened in 1918 flu pandemic, where it wasn't the initial flu that killed people. Everybody hunkered down. But after World War I was won, everybody came out to party and they kind of let their guards down. And that's when it swept through and that's when it killed all those people. There's a lot of people worried that that might be the case right now with corona, with a second wave that comes through. Now, I would say we shouldn't be too alarmist about this because there's a couple of things to think about. We have a much better understanding of epidemiology than in 1918. We now have ideas of social distancing and masks and all this other stuff. We have media that lets us see people dying and get regular to-the-minute updates of death counts and all that stuff, even though, granted, a lot of people do not believe that. And we have a much better indication of who vulnerable populations are with the 1918 flu pandemic, because most of the deaths were from overactive immune responses. It would actually kill a lot of young, healthy people. We know now that this particular disease, while it has some Kawasaki-like symptoms in children and can still kill you when you are a younger person, is more likely to kill you when you are older. And therefore, if we take our advice accordingly and have this kind of soft opening of places be mostly young, healthy people or people who have already been infected and gone through it, et cetera, then this can be done well. I am, however, skeptical that it will be. I think there's going to be a lot of older, more vulnerable populations coming out. I think there's going to be a lot of mass gatherings where people think this disease is gone, and it's not. In a lot of places, including where I'm talking to you now, as this quarantine ends, you may actually be more likely to get it now at the end of the quarantine than you ever have been. You know, depending on the infection rates in your area, it could be that now, as quarantine is ending, is actually the time where there are the most people around you that are infected and likely to transfer it to you. So all of those things should be considered. As you guys go out into the world, what I would advise you is this. One of the things we're seeing is, and this is something that I think I brought up, you know, in February, I'm very skeptical of this 6-foot rule. We know the droplets can go further than that in many, many circumstances. And not only that, but people are not stationary. They move around. That's a 6-foot bubble or whatever, if it's 10 feet, that moves around with you. That bubble doesn't just go away the second you walk through it. And so how much of that resides in the air? You know, if you walk behind somebody 50 yards, are you just walking right through their bubble the entire time? How do all those dynamics work? What we're finding more and more is that 6-foot rule is really like the red line on your tachometer. It doesn't mean that's where you drive the car. It means that's the extreme and you're going to blow the engine. So think of it like the closest you could ever possibly get to somebody is 6 feet. But in general, you want to stay much further away. I would recommend everybody going out, just think about that. Keep your distance, wear a mask 100% of the time you're outside, not just to protect yourself, but to protect other people in case you are an asymptomatic carrier. Keep your distance. We talked before about washing hands. Just because it's not nearly as important as they originally thought doesn't mean it's not still important. And use some common sense, knowing that even if this disease infects you and doesn't hurt you, it could hurt other people down the line, including people that you love. Now, there are places like New Zealand, where science faction superfan Dwayne lives, that essentially have like no new infections, and they're slowly opening up. Now, places like New Zealand are actually getting ready to try something really, really cool, which is genomic tracing of the virus. Meaning, as people get infected, they can do a genomic analysis of the particular virus that they have and see slight mutations from other viruses present, and that way trace where they got it from. Because imagine, let's say you have 100 people who are infected. A few people infected those 100 people. How do you figure out who infected who and where? One of the ways is to compare the genetics of each one of those viruses to look for the little mutations and say, okay, here's the ancestor of all these people's infection, and it's this one guy. And here's the ancestor of all these people's infection, and it's this one guy. And we have been starting to do this in certain case studies. We found in certain cases that, for instance, healthcare workers who we thought got infected on the job, actually, they got infected from social situations. So we could tell that because the genetic lineage of the coronavirus that they specifically had didn't come from that hospital. It came from their buddy that they met to go play pool one day. This is important. This will help us with contact tracing, with figuring out where outbreaks come from and how to stop them. And that is the most important thing we can do right now. As things open up, we are going to have little fires. It is not going to necessarily turn into a giant brush fire if we manage it right. And the way to manage it is, if you're in the extreme case like New Zealand, you could do stuff really well. You have very, very low initial infection, low population density, all that kind of stuff. And then you do genomic tracing. You can almost be sure that as those little fires pop up, you can notice them. You can figure out where they came from. You can isolate those people and take care of that situation. However, If you're not doing contact tracing and you have one or two people going out, they could spread it to a lot of people. A new study just came out. It's not peer-reviewed yet, but it did just get published on a preprint journal that seems to indicate that there are a few super spreaders that are really carrying this disease around. The numbers that they gave out were that in a study case in Israel, 10% of people who are infected cause 90% of future infections. What does that mean? That means that 90% of the people who are infected are doing a really good job of quarantining themselves and keeping themselves from spreading it to other people. And there's just 10% who are fucking assholes who are causing this problem for the rest of us. Think what that means. That means that this isn't an inevitable outbreak. This is something caused by a shitty 10% of our population, the people who don't want to wear masks, who don't believe it's real, who don't seem to care about the health of those around them. In some ways, that's actually a really refreshing number because it means that the most of us are still really trying to help one another. And we just kind of have to notice these people who are outside the norm. A lot of them are people who suffer from things like personality disorders, delusional disorders, those kind of things. They think everything's a conspiracy and people are out to get them. And we have to understand that those people will exist in our society. And in a society with the possibility of a pandemic, those people are incredibly dangerous. So dangerous, they cause 90% of the pandemic. Another interesting article came out this week that seems to indicate that the nose is the main passageway for the disease into the human body. They were looking at the prevalence of that ACE2 spike protein that we talked about. That is the protein that coronavirus binds to in your cells to infect you. And they found that it was way overrepresented in the upper part of the nasal cavity. It slowly petered out as it went lower. That doesn't mean you can't breathe in through your mouth and get it. So don't think like plugging your nose is going to immediately keep you safe. But what it does mean is if you are breathing in, it might actually be better to breathe in through your mouth. Doesn't mean you're going to be completely safe, but it does mean you have fewer routes for that virus to infect your cells because you have less ACE2 spike proteins there. Ever since I read this article, I think it came out Thursday, as I've been walking around with my mask on, keeping social distancing, even then, if I'm within 20 feet of somebody, I just start breathing through my mouth. I have no idea whether or not that's going to work or not, but fuck it. Who the hell cares? Why not try? But very interesting stuff, because we are actually seeing not only the binding sites to where this, to how this enters the body, which we already knew of, but the prevalence of those binding sites in different parts of the human body. We still don't know why it's so bad when these get down to the lower respiratory tract, if we have less ACE2 spike proteins down there, except for maybe that just means that by the time it gets down there and can infect all those places with less ACE2, it's really an out of control infection that your body can't stop. A very interesting article came out at the end of last week that seems to indicate a correlation between individuals with a mutation known to cause Alzheimer's disease and increased likelihood of infection with COVID. This is really, really interesting. So the mutation is the APOE3 gene that has a mutant variant called APOE4, right? So most of the population has APOE3, which is the main manifestation of the gene, but a few people have this mutant gene. And we've known for a long time that people with APOE4 are 14 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's. I'm going to say that again. Not 14%, 14 times more likely. Huge, obviously, epidemiological-wise, in a field where 10% increase is a big deal. 14-fold increase is huge. So obviously, like anything, you can be heterozygous or homozygous for this. About 3% of the population is homozygous for that mutant APOE4 gene. 69% of the population is homozygous for the standard APOE3 gene, and the remaining 18% have one of each. They're heterozygous for it. However, in looking at COVID infections, researchers were really surprised because they found that people with that mutation for APOE4, the one that causes you 14 times more Alzheimer's, they're also dramatically overrepresented in COVID cases, in COVID infections. That's really interesting. The math seems to indicate that the variant made an individual more than 2 times more likely to be infected. We're not completely sure why this is, though we do know that that particular gene does have some immunity function to it, so that might be it. Keep in mind, it might also be the case that, remember we talked about the testing problem before, maybe people with this don't necessarily get infected more. Maybe they just express it more often, so they're more likely to have a non-asymptomatic infection. And so because they're non-asymptomatic, they go to the hospital, they get tested more, and they're overrepresented. We don't know yet. We don't know whether this is a deal of overrepresentation of bad symptoms or they actually get infected more. However, more than 2 times, again, is very statistically significant. We'll see if we can do follow-up studies to see what else this might mean and what else it might imply. I would be curious to know if this is a case of them getting infected more or just having more severe severe symptoms. And B, I would wonder if this leads open a door where we go, oh man, this has been happening with other diseases as well. If it compromised the immune system, it's happening with the flu or something else. And we just never knew because we didn't have this widespread, huge end sample that's almost the Earth, you know? So very, very interesting stuff. That is one of the most exciting papers coming out, because I also think anytime you find those issues, if you find people that are more susceptible to the disease, if you could test them ahead of time and know that they are in danger more than other people, you can warn them and tell them to stay out. It's kind of the same stuff we were talking about with the blood typing before. We're not 100% sure that's true, but if we can confirm that, you know, you are less likely to get it if you have O blood type or whatever, we can use that to help steer people, or at least help them make their decision on how they live their lives in a time where we still have to go around and possibly get infected. You know, if you're somebody who used to have asthma, you have a pre-existing condition, your immune system is shot, and you have this Alzheimer's disease, like, you just stay inside, man. We'll do DoorDash deliveries to you for the next couple of months. But regardless, each person's individual susceptibility seems to have so many factors, from their age, to their gender, to their blood type, to their contact with other people, to their pre-existing conditions, and this could be another one. And you could almost see a system where we set all these variables up and we give somebody kind of an idea of how dangerous it is for them to do any specific activity and allow them to then go off and choose on their own. And in one more somewhat terrifying piece of corona news, we are now seeing more and more that the disease is impacting pregnant women and their fetuses. We have some small case studies about this. Now, keep in mind, most of the babies we've seen born to mothers with COVID infections, the babies appear totally normal. So we don't necessarily see a problem right off the bat. However, we don't know yet if they represent some extreme developmental delays that we won't see for 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. What we do know is we have seen some indications that it can cause miscarriage, but more scarily almost, we see that the placenta of these women, especially in these small case studies, I think it was like all of them, is different. It is filled with blood clots. It's not allowing as much blood through to the baby, and that could be limiting that child's growth. So while they might come out seeming healthy, they very well might have missed vital blood or nutrients or oxygen during certain developmental phases that could absolutely cause permanent damage. This is terrifying to me, because we have a bunch of pregnant women out there who, just by walking around in a crowd with nobody coughing, nobody sick, could get sick from asymptomatic transfer and then might have a child with lifelong disabilities. Now, how each individual person chooses to handle this will be up to them. Some of the articles will talk about women who are incredibly concerned about it. They haven't left their house in 2 months. They're doing all their OB appointments by phone. I don't know what the answer is to it, because even that has a cost, right? If there's a non-corona related issue with that child and you don't discover it till later, that can be a problem too. So again, we have to balance these things back and forth. But right now it's really scary, because examination of those placentas, at least in this case study, does not seem to say that this is a rare thing. In fact, it seems to be the rule, not the exception. And so if we have damaged placentas that are not giving blood to babies at any point, we might not find out the actual consequences of this until we get to full neurological development, you know, 12, 13 years down the road. This could be kind of like Zika 2.0 when it comes to pregnant women, and that's really, really scary. And lastly, in somewhat sadder news, we've seen this disease go through East Asia and Europe and North America, and we are now seeing it really take its toll on Latin America with some utterly terrifying results. Brazil now has the second most infections right after the United States. And again, they might have even more because they do even less testing than we do. You might have seen aerial pictures of mass graves in Brazil or heard about their almost 500,000 strong infection number. But right now, maybe even more so than the U.S., their national leadership is severely failing them. So their president, Bolsonaro, whose personality could best be described as the human embodiment of truck nuts, he's pushed this as quote-unquote a little flu and pushed hard to keep any kind of widespread quarantine from happening, including fighting against his local governors who instituted such measures. Sounds familiar to me here in California. And unfortunately, this fight has apparently been successful in areas that are still increasing their infection rates. So they hadn't plateaued, they're not going down, they're actually increasing their infection rates, and because of national pressure, they're still easing off their quarantine. This is really sad. I'm so sorry to any Brazilian listeners out there. I feel for you. I know how it feels to have a dumbass president making stupid-ass decisions that are killing people in your country. I am so sorry for what is happening to you guys right now, because that infection is going to boom there. Some interesting numbers that I didn't realize until I started looking into this and what was going on in Brazil, but it's 25% of the population lives in slums, in the favelas. Those are very close quarters. It's hard for them to get PPE type stuff, and the infections are going to sweep through those areas. A lot of those people are already immunocompromised and don't have access to good healthcare. You add that to the fact that places like Amazonia, which is one of the largest states, was super hard hit and are even now relieving a lot of their quarantine statuses, despite the fact that they're super hard hit because of this national pressure. Similarly, Mexico is starting to get hard hit with their president, who a couple weeks ago basically said, I'll show you my protection from COVID, and held up like a magic amulet he had around his neck. That's their fucking president. Now, again, I'm from the US, so I have no place to criticize right now because I guarantee you ours is worse. But this is giving you a hint at how serious leaders are taking this. And think about it. For them, why would they take it seriously? I mean, couple hundred thousand people dead here or there isn't going to change, especially if you're in a semi-dictatorship like Brazil is starting to become. And in fact, you're probably going to take out a lot of these sick people in your economy. And there is this idea that many fascist dictators have had throughout time that you want to eliminate. You want to cull that sick. That allows you to spend more money and resources on school and the military and all this other stuff. Get rid of the old people. We don't fucking need them. They're totally useless. They're not helping us at all. I don't know if it's that or superstition or fear of looking weak in front of other nations, but whatever it is, there are going to be a lot of people suffering in places like Mexico and Brazil, who, by the way, put together make up about half the population of Latin America. There's going to be a lot of deaths in these places because of this. So what I would say to all my Latin American listeners, if you can hear this, double down on the masks, watch your social distancing. I know some people, they can't. They literally can't. The alleyways in which they walk to get from their house to the store are 4 feet wide. There's no way they can appropriately do it. Whatever you can do, try your hardest. My heart goes out to anybody who can't actually keep themselves safe in these situations, and especially in a place where your government seems to be actively trying to get you sick. Well, guys, I hope that next week brings a little bit more good coronavirus news. There's some interesting murmurs about some of the vaccine trials, so if those end up getting published in the meantime, you will absolutely hear about them from me next week. And let's do our best as we're all going out there into the world during a very, very scary time to look out for one another. Remember, that mask protects the other person more than it protects you, and that your role as a citizen is to protect your fellow citizens. So go out there, be safe, keep other people safe, keep your head up. This will pass. It shall pass. We just need to make it through, and how we do so will affect how many people die, whether or not the economy collapses, etc., etc., etc. Best thing we can do is keep away from one another, do everything we possibly can to keep this from spreading. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 444.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.